Bob Orr, and I'm a retired justice of the North Carolina Supreme Court and currently of counsel with the Campbell Shatley Law Firm in Asheville.
And now you were a delegate to the Republican National Convention for John Kasich. How were you elected as a delegate, I'm curious?
There were two separate procedures. One where delegates were elected at the district level, and then there was a slate presented at the state convention for at-large delegates, and I was one of the members of the slate as a designated Kasich delegate.
I see. Okay. Okay, now you are in Cleveland on Monday, and as it's been reported, you left the convention yesterday. According to the Associated Press, you didn't attend the ceremonies on Tuesday night, and it's been reported that you ran into a problem with your credentials on Tuesday. What exactly happened?
I had been asked by a variety of local and regional media about whether I would be supporting Trump, since I had obviously been supporting Kasich, and as I have said for months, no, I wasn't going to support him at the convention, and I wasn't going to vote for him in the election. And then, of course, they would ask why, and so I explained why. And unfortunately, that did not sit well with at least some in the party leadership, and so I was advised on Tuesday morning that my credentials, which normally would just be picked up in a routine fashion, were being held by the chairman, and that I needed to talk to the chairman before I could get those credentials.
Republican Party Chairman Robin Hayes.
That's correct. Yeah. And I like Robin. He's a fine gentleman, but they were all very upset over my critical remarks about Mr. Trump, and supposedly those comments were hurting the party. I would say to the contrary that all of Mr. Trump's comments for the past 6 months have been hurting the Republican Party, not my comments. But anyway, it became pretty obvious that it was a counterproductive process for me to continue to stay. And so I emailed Chairman Hayes and said, look, you just keep the credentials, let one of the alternates have my slot, and then we'll head back to North Carolina.
Oh, okay, so you did not go meet with Chairman Hayes.
No, we had an email or text exchange. I think I can't remember which at this point, but I didn't need to go and hear that they didn't want me to say mean things about Donald Trump. So,
did Chairman Hayes say anything to you in the email about your comments about Trump?
Well, they had indicated, and most of the communications came from the executive director of the party.
Dallas Woodhouse.
Yeah, who was apoplectic over my comments. And, said, I ought to leave. And it was his decision. He wouldn't let me have the attention. But the communications with Chairman Hayes simply was that, your comments hurt the party, and, we want to talk to you about them. And it just didn't seem like it would be a productive conversation. The great irony is that Ted Cruz validated essentially, what I did and said by refusing to endorse Trump in his comments last night. And I would like to make the observation that, when you consider that John Kasich was probably the more centrist of all the Republican candidates, and he has not endorsed Trump, and Ted Cruz was probably one of the most conservative of all the Republican candidates, and he's refused to endorse Trump. It makes you wonder, how in the world is the Republican Party nominating Donald Trump, or why they're nominating?
In the News and Observer, Dallas Woodhouse was quoted as having said, "You have not been a good Republican for a long time." What is your response? Well, you laugh. So, what is your response to that?
Well, Dallas is prone to wild overstatements under normal circumstances. I would certainly put my career Republican credentials up against anybody. I've been a precinct chairman. I've been a county chairman there in Buncombe County back in the 80s. I ran 5 statewide elections as the Republican nominee for the Court of Appeals and the Supreme Court, and won 4 of those elections. And I've certainly supported a wide range of Republican candidates over the years, personally and financially, and, you know, to somehow question my Republican credentials is ludicrous. And
Woodhouse went on in that article. He said, it's not about how you feel about Donald Trump. It's about how you feel about Republican voters. Do you have a response to that?
Well, yeah, it must be the same way Ted Cruz feels about Republican voters. It must be the same way that John Kasich feels about Republican voters. It's not like I'm some rogue Republican out here opposing Trump. I mean, there are prominent Republicans across the country, across the state. I mean, Art Pope, you know, is one of the leading conservative funder in North Carolina, does not support Trump, and didn't go to the convention because he didn't want to be there for a Trump coronation. John Hood, who's one of the more prominent conservative columnists in the state and does some stuff nationally, you know, has written vitriolic pieces about Trump. You know, so, I mean, that's the irony to me. Is, you know, I mean, the only problem was I was a delegate and was willing to answer questions that the media posed.
You know, many, but certainly not all Republicans have sort of reluctantly thrown their support behind Trump, some more enthusiastically than others, in the interest of party unity and winning in November. Why haven't you done that?
Because I think Donald Trump is a dangerous individual and is singularly unqualified to be president of the United States and commander-in-chief of our military forces. I mean, it's simply a question of the threat, at least in my mind, and obviously in others, that he poses if he should be elected to the highest position in our country, with all of the powers that go with it. It's a scary thought.
Could you elaborate a little bit on why you think he's a danger?
I don't think he's well-read or well-studied. I don't think he listens particularly well to other people. You know, people say, well, you get a good cabinet in, that'll resolve all these issues. You know, the person makes the final decision. I think he's very quick to belittle and demean not the way to govern. I mean, we have a lot of problems in this country and in this world, and you're not going to find workable solutions if you are unreasonable and bellicose and agonistic towards the people you've got to work with. I don't think he understands the concept of separation of powers, that Congress has a constitutional role in what happens in this country, that the courts have a constitutional role in deciding what's constitutional and what's unconstitutional. And if you don't have an understanding and an appreciation of the fact that you don't have unlimited power, then you start, I think, posing a threat to the whole democratic process. He's ill-tempered or ill-suited via his temperament to be president.
So this puts you in a really difficult position, obviously. You know, despite Dallas Woodhouse's claim that you aren't a good Republican and haven't been one for a long time, as you mentioned, you know, you were the Buncombe County GOP chairman. You've been involved in Republican Party politics for 40 plus years. You were there in Cleveland to support a Republican in John Kasich. And you have said you cannot support Donald Trump. So this is tricky for you, obviously. Do you vote for Hillary Clinton?
Well, one of my favorite lines from years past was when a question was asked about how are you going to vote? And the answer was by secret ballot, like I do every election. I haven't decided what I'm going to do on the presidential race, other than I simply will not vote for Trump. There are other candidates. I mean, you know, Gary Johnson, the libertarian, is a pretty reasonable libertarian, and William Weld, I think, is a great choice for the number two slot. I've never been a Clinton fan. I've got some real problems with Secretary Clinton. But I don't know what I'm going to do. You know, the good news is I've got a couple of months to figure that out.
Right. Are you still considering Secretary Clinton?
Well, the only person, let me put it this way, the only person that I'm not considering, well, I shouldn't say that, that's probably, you know, among the leading candidates, you know, I can't vote for Trump because, as I said, I think that would be an abdication of my responsibilities.
So not to try to pin you down on who you're voting for or since you obviously haven't come up with that yet, but is it in your opinion that Hillary Clinton is a better choice than Donald Trump?
Yes. I mean, people go crazy over that, but you know, I think in the context, if there was a national crisis, I would feel more secure with any of the other 15 or 16 Republicans that ran for president, or Mrs. Clinton, or Gary Johnson. I would feel more secure with them making the decision for the country than I would be Donald Trump making that decision.
The reason I ask so much about Hillary is because, you know, many of the Republicans that have gotten on board with Donald Trump, even though they don't necessarily like or respect him, I think that's been clear with many of the people like Paul Ryan and some of his former rivals who are now backing him. They've made the argument that this election is a binary choice. You know, it's a choice between Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump. And of course, there are other candidates out there like Gary Johnson. But essentially, kind of realistically looking at it, the two that have a chance to win are Hillary and Donald Trump. So does that weigh into your decision? I mean, for instance, Bernie Sanders, who has said that he'll do anything in his power to make sure that Donald Trump is not elected. But I think recently he stopped short of like really fully full-throat endorsing Hillary Clinton. And I'm wondering how people kind of square that, you know, because if it is this binary choice, isn't the only way to stop Donald Trump to vote for Hillary Clinton at this point?
Well, it may seem strange to quote Charles Koch on public radio, but I think he was asked the same question. Koch, of course, being one of the famous Koch brothers of conservative funding fame, he said that if I were asked, you have to pick cancer or a heart attack, which would you pick? He said, I'd pick neither. And you know, that may be where we are in this presidential race. Mm-hmm. You know, there may be a lot of people who say, I can't vote for any of these people, so mm-hmm. therefore I'm not going to vote for president. I'll vote for all the other races.
Right. But
and,
you yourself.
Know, maybe that's seen as an abdication. But if I feel Donald Trump is a threat to the country, and so therefore I can't vote for him. You know, and maybe Mrs. Clinton will prove between now and November that she's a threat to the country. But a lot of people like me are really dismayed. And I was thinking this morning, is it too late for a Casey Cruz third party effort?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think there would be a lot of people in both parties, unaffiliated, you know, who would jump to a Casey Cruz ticket like drowning people clinging to a life preserve.
Yeah, you know, I think it's too late for them to get on the ballot, but I think you're right that there would be a lot of people who would be open to writing them in, and it wouldn't be hard to get the nation's attention on write-in ballots in this election, I don't think.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I mean, I think probably for the first time, if there was a viable other choice, a lot of people would be willing to make that special effort.
I wonder, you know, when we're talking about the binary choice thing, you know, Hillary or Trump, and I guess I should say Clinton or Trump. I don't want to be disparaging or anything. So Gary Johnson is certainly a viable choice. Jill Stein, also a viable choice. Neither of them are expected to be able to win. And now we're talking about Donald Trump, and in your opinion, as someone as being very dangerous to the country. Is it safe at this point to sort of make what some might call symbolic votes for a third party that could potentially, yes, have an impact down the road as far as I talk to a lot of people who are really fed up with the two-party system and really want sure. more options. But is now the time to go that route?
Well, I think it's an individual choice. I mean, where does your conscience and judgment lead you in that context? And we do have 2 months to go, or more than 2 months, I guess, 3 months. And so, you know, there will be an opportunity for people to seriously evaluate the two major candidates and then other candidates. And, you know, voting is an individual process.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to make that decision when you go in the voting booth. just as I did. And if it's a vote that in the end really means nothing, but you feel good about it, then that's what people ought to do. Rarely do I quote Ted Cruz, but he said, vote your conscience.
Well, you pretty much just answered my next question, but I was going to ask what you would say to people who are having trouble supporting Trump, especially Republicans who have been Republicans for a long time.
Well, I think, you know, individuals have to decide who can you live with as president of the United States over the next 4 years. Or if you can't live with any of them, then, and you feel like you just can't cast a vote for them, then vote for the other candidates and hope that the Congress and the judiciary, you know, exercise their constitutional duty to keep up a great balance of power. If you want to read something really interesting, go read George Washington's Farewell Address to the Nation. It has some really good observations in there from our first president about power and the need for a balanced approach. So, you know, we do have separation of powers. And the Congress, no matter who's controlling it, the courts, no matter what appointees are in the federal system, will have an important role no matter who's elected president. And they should have an important role no matter who's elected president. We are not a single dictatorship where the executive is the supreme leader of the country. And, you know, thank goodness for that.
What is this episode with your credentials and the friction that you had with the North Carolina GOP tell you about the state of the Republican Party in North Carolina?
I think for the most part, the Republican Party is struggling. There is less and less interest in a broad tent collaborative party process. I mean, this is radically different from the party I grew up with, party of Jim Holzhauser, Jim Broyhill, Jim Martin. And, you know, I get frustrated that, you know, so the Tea Party has, you know, infiltrated the party structure. Well, the Tea Party ought to go form its own party. And Trump, I consider, have the Me Party.
The
Those
Me
folks
Party.
Want to have their own party. Fine. Yeah, the Me Party. It's all about Me Party. You know, I'd like to see us get back and I think this is true for Democrats, too, where the party structure and organization means something, and maybe it's time for a middle-of-the-road third party that draws from currently registered Democrats and unaffiliated and Republicans like me.
You know, the convention's still going on. It's in its last day, so not yet done. But how would you give me your assessment of the convention so far? How do you think it's gone?
I would say it ain't gone very well. Looks to me like, you know, there's some sort of bizarre controversy each day, despite the well-orchestrated attempts to make it an appearance of unity. But, you know, this isn't about the Republican Party. It's all about Trump. You know, he's all about Trump. Campaign's all about Trump. And they're just simply using the Republican Party as vehicle, you know, for Trump's aggrandizement.
Right. So the convention has not gone well.
I wouldn't say so. I mean, it certainly, I don't believe, has launched forward into the traditional fall election with any momentum.
You brought up Ted Cruz's speech last night, and that may have been, so far at least, maybe the most pivotal moment, I think, of the convention. Have you ever seen anything like this in your lifetime?
No, and I was asked by a reporter when I was up in Cleveland if I thought Cruz would endorse Trump, and I said, well, I can't believe he's been asked to speak without a promise that he would endorse him, which makes you wonder about the incompetence of, you know, the operation, you know, to put Ted Cruz up there, and, you know, he doesn't endorse Trump. And then, as I think today has come out and said, he won't even commit to voting for him. Then anybody who would attack his father and his wife don't merit his support. I mean, that's pretty remarkable. But for whatever reason, they put him up there.
And how about the voting? You know, I know there were a couple of last-ditch efforts by the Never Trump movement to stop his nomination. How do you think that went? Obviously, those efforts failed, but what did you think of what happened?
Well, you know, it was disappointing. It would have been nice to see what would happen in an open convention. You know, I blame Priebus and the party hierarchy for caving in to, you know, to Trump's efforts to, you know, to stop that. But from my perspective, I'd still be in Cleveland if it was an open convention.
What did you think of Donald Trump's pick of Mike Pence as vice president?
You know, I think it's a non-factor. Governor Pence seems like a very nice but extremely conservative individual, but I don't think Trump would any more listen to him than he would listen to me. He's just trying to assuage, you know, a few party people that said, oh, if you pick a good, solid conservative, you know, that'll help with party unity. Didn't help Ted Cruz.
What are the things about Hillary Clinton that you don't like?
I don't believe she thinks the rules apply to her. Like, the Clintons have always operated in their own self-interest. I think she's a little more extreme on a variety of issues than I'm comfortable with. I don't think she was a particularly effective Secretary of State, but I do think she genuinely cares about people. I don't think Donald Trump does. I think Clinton's, former President Clinton, governed from a fairly moderate position. I mean, you know, there was fiscal restraint. I mean, I don't see Mrs. Clinton doing anything horribly rash. And, you know, I don't think she's a mean-spirited person. I think Trump is a mean-spirited person. I mean, yeah, and I'll say this, you know, when I first drew the I'll never vote for Trump, because I've got to say, I didn't watch all those stupid reality shows of his, so I really didn't have much of an impression about him until the primary season started. You know, but when he made those remarks about Senator McCain, you know, a distinguished veteran and leader of this country who suffered enormously as a prisoner of war, you know, to make those demeaning comments about him and, in essence, all others who were prisoners of war, not just in Vietnam, but in prior wars, was just beyond the pale. But I think that's who he is. I mean, I think that if you want a microscopic picture of Donald Trump, it's demeaning John McCain, POW experience. He was a loser.
Yeah, I think his quote was, I like people who haven't been captured, or something like that.
Yeah.
What did you think of the last 8 years with President Obama? How would you say Obama has done?
I don't think he has governed very effectively. I fundamentally disagree with his use of executive orders. I mean, that's a philosophical perspective for me that I would hold any president accountable for that. I think you start diminishing the separation of powers with all of these executive orders. But I will say this, he has governed with great dignity. He has been a positive role model or image. If I were going to tell my children or grandchildren, they're all grown, but for my grandchildren, whose character would I want you to emulate? I would far, far prefer having them emulate President Obama's character and dignity than I would the bombastic, mean-spirited egotism of a Donald Trump. You know, which one of the great ironies in all of this is I've never been in a church where the kind of characteristics and qualities that Trump demonstrates have been condoned. It's just the opposite. I didn't vote for Barack Obama. Cast my first presidential ballot by absentee when I was in the Army in 1968. Voted for Richard Nixon, and I voted for the Republican nominee every single presidential election cycle since.
You know,
this time.
Now, as someone who served in the Army, do you think that has some to do with why especially the remarks about Senator McCain were so offensive to you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and don't get me wrong. I was, you know, I didn't go to Vietnam. I didn't see combat.
You were in
I
Germany,
those,
right?
I was in Germany, correct, yeah. You know, but I admire all of those individuals who did go and, you know, were injured or lost their lives. And, I mean, I think, you know, as a veteran, that remark affected me, which is why it surprises me to see military people come out and support Trump. You know, and I don't know how that'll be divided, but, you know, maybe there's an attraction to the brashness and toughness, but, you know, I think Trump doesn't care about. I mean, truthfully, he was a draft dodger.
Do you think that Donald Trump is a tough person?
I think it's all about Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
It is, you know, I think this is one big ego trip and reality TV show for him. So there was an interview they were talking the other day about, maybe it was with Manafort, the campaign manager. Well, Trump doesn't really, you know, he's going to run this kind of like chairman of the board. You know, he's going to get people who actually reach stuff. And, I mean, holy cow. I mean, you know, you're willing to put somebody like that in overseeing our nuclear missile sites? I mean,
you know, you said you've never seen anything like this. You know, we can't pretend that politics hasn't always been ugly. It definitely always has. There have always been personal attacks and things like that. It does, though, seem to be unlike anything I've seen, like during the campaign, especially amongst the Republican rivals, with some of the comments that were made between them. Where do you think we are as a country politically? And are we at a breaking point? I mean, how much further can it go?
Well, yeah, maybe this is a reflection of being old and having grown up in a small town in North Carolina with a mother who was a school teacher. I mean, you didn't say those kind of things, you know? And it's not just the politics reflects our society. When you look at the talk shows, you know, the so-called legitimate news stories and or news programs, and you got all of these yelling, one-sided commentaries going on. I mean, I just think culturally we are fracturing in that the qualities of civility and the ability to rationally discuss problems and try and come up with solutions that are beneficial to the broader community. I mean, we've lost that. And frankly, I think the media in part is to blame for this. It's sort of the anything goes mindset, whether it's on the left or the right. And that's reflected in our politics.
So you mentioned both the right and the left, and I was just going to ask you that. I mean, do you see this as a problem that is happening on both sides? Because, you know, it's the Republicans who nominated Donald Trump, and you yourself say that on the Democratic side, you believe that Hillary Clinton does care about people, although you do disagree with her on many issues. So I don't want to make it about sides, but is it the Republican Party that has a real problem, or is it both sides?
No, I clearly think it's both sides, and I'll give you one example that really bothers me. I consider myself a pretty solid conservationist and environmental supporter. You know, I'm from the old Teddy Roosevelt school and serve on a couple of boards involving the parks and land trust, and I support Pat McCrory, and I see these ads about coal ash, you know, trying to unfairly label him with these extreme ads. I mean, they're just simply wrong and they're unfair. And that comes from the left. You know, so you see it on both sides. You demonize people. You exaggerate issues. You use 30-second sound bites. You know, it's driving this wedge between reasonable people who need to come together to solve solutions like coal ash. You can't always get an agreement, but you need to be able to agree to disagree and take a constructive approach in opposing a policy. But it's this demonizing, this grossly exaggerating the issue that both sides do it.
You're a supporter of Pat McCrory. I wonder what your assessment of the North Carolina legislature has been. And I'm especially thinking of legislation like House Bill 2 that's been really divisive. And I wonder what you think about the performance of the legislature.
I would give it mixed reviews in a variety of ways. I think there has been a bit of intoxication with the power of controlling the legislature. But having been in politics here in North Carolina all my life, I've seen the Democrats abuse it for years. Now, that doesn't justify the Republicans doing that. But, I mean, that's just simply been the practice. You pass laws to shaft your opponent. So I would have liked to have seen the Republicans take a more principled approach to a lot of the legislation, not done things as quickly. I mean, there was a legitimate issue, but there was no legitimate discussion or consideration about, okay, what's the problem? You know, what's the most effective and appropriate solution to that problem? And, you know, you don't take the problem that could be resolved with a fly swatter and take a sledgehammer to it, you know, and you don't do it, you know, in 24 hours or whatever the time frame is. So, you know, I think fiscally, you know, the legislature has done a good job in getting the state's financial condition squared away. I think they have come around to doing more for education. We passed the bond referendum, which was huge. But, you know, some of the issues involving local government, Republicans have always said, hey, it's at the local level that we believe in, you know, that local leaders should be able to make these decisions, and the federal government ought to stay out of it, and Raleigh ought to stay out of it, and then we've legislature turned right around and interfered in the Asheville water case, the Charlotte Airport, Boone extraterritorial zoning, I mean, you know, just contrary to basic Republican principles. So I'd give them a mixed grade, not that they care.
Well, it's interesting. Your perspective is really interesting to me. You're a bit older than me. I'm just in my early 30s. I am a North Carolinian. Born in Durham, and you know, so when I was growing up, of course, Democrats were in control of this state. You mentioned that both sides have abused their power, and I hear that argument, especially when it comes to gerrymandering. You know, that argument is used a lot, that Republicans have done it and Democrats did it when they were in power. But to my recollection, and I admit that I didn't start really closely following this until I was later in my life, that I have not witnessed, you know, the kinds of laws being passed like House Bill 2 where, you know, businesses across the country refuse to come to North Carolina, where we're like, you know, on the BBC late at night getting talked about in North Carolina, that the British government is putting out travel advisories about our state. I mean, I've not seen anything like this. I mean,
that's the media world we live in, that an issue like that, you know, gets nationalized instantaneously. When I was a college student, I worked as a cameraman for a news department of a TV station in Charlotte covering the legislature. I was there when they passed the speaker ban law. You know, I mean, what if this Republican legislature passed a bill that said no communist could speak on a university campus? I mean, what kind of international attention would that get? Mm-hmm. Well, that was done by the Democrats 55 years ago.
So you're saying it is a fair comparison that
it
the Democrats...
Comparison.
Okay, that's... Right. Yeah. Interesting.
It is a fair comparison. You know, we used to elect superior court judges, trial judges, statewide, but we nominated them by district. You know why we elected them statewide? Because the straight party ticket assured that all the superior court judges in the state would be Democrats. When I came out of law school, there was not one elected Superior Court judge in this state who was a registered Republican. And it was done that way, frankly, not just to make sure Republicans didn't get elected, but that blacks and women, for the most part, didn't get elected as judges. That's the way the system worked under Democrat control for 140 years. And one of the reasons that, you know, beginning my legal career, Republican, you know, I dealt with those sorts of abuses of power, but that doesn't legitimize doing it once the Republicans get control.
Can I just point out, though, that isn't it fair to say that the Democratic Party and the Republican Party effectively switched places? I mean, that Republicans became Democrats, Democrats became Republicans. And so at this, you know, current moment, you've got Republicans saying, talking about Abraham Lincoln and saying, we are the party of Lincoln. You know, if you look back at the kinds of legislation that is being passed, I mean, to my views as a young man, without as much of the history, it seems to me like the kind of party that would have been the party of Lincoln would have been the Democratic Party of today.
Well, that's there's certainly elements of truth to that. I mean, the dynamics of party support or the party composition has changed dramatically years for a variety of reasons. I mean, you know, historically, the African-American community, when the Democrats let them vote, were registered as Republicans. That obviously has changed. You know, so, yeah, I mean that's not an unfair. And a lot of conservative Democrats moved into the Republican Party. I was all part of Nixon's Southern strategy and the like. Anyway, look, I've got to do another.
Yeah, sorry, I've taken a lot of your time. Let me just ask one last question, though.
Sure.
You know, how has this whole situation been like personally to you? I mean, you're sort of sticking your neck out there by criticizing the Republican Party and a Republican Party that does seem in a bit of a retaliatory mood. What has this been like for you, and how do you feel about how the last week has gone?
Well, interestingly, I've had a variety of emails and text messages from friends whose opinion I hold in high regard, some of whom are conservative Republicans, saying, thanks for saying that. We appreciate your willingness to take the lead in saying what needs to be said. I'm dismayed over where the Republican Party's going. I'm not worried about it. I'm not running for anything.
All right. Well, Mr. Orr, I really appreciate you taking so much time out of your day to talk to me.
Sure. Take care.